702. Weekend Breakfast with Refilwe Mpakanyane. Live, online, smartphones, DSTV channel 856, 92.7 and 106 FM.
6:37 on the Saturday edition of Weekend Breakfast. We're taking your calls on 011-883-0702 and your voice notes and text messages can be sent to 072-702-1702. Time to talk health now with resident GP, Dr. Fundile Nyathi, as we focus on World AIDS Day, which we commemorated and marked this past Thursday. And an interesting article in The Conversation caught my eye, which is one around injectable HIV prevention drugs, that pre-exposure prophylaxis drug, which can also be found in injectable form. And I thought it might be useful to unpack with Dr. Nyathi, first of all, the efficacy of injectable PrEP, how it works, how often one takes it, and how it might improve the HIV disease burden in South Africa were it to be widely available. How might it work in our specific context? So for more on that and just to help us unpack research around injectable PrEP in South Africa is Dr. Fundile Nyathi, our resident GP and of course the CEO of Proactive Health Solutions. Good morning, Doc. A pleasure as always.
Good morning, Refilwe, and good morning to all of your listeners.
And of course, we're inviting anyone with questions around pre-exposure prophylaxis, especially the injectable one that we're discussing this morning. Do give us a call on 011-883-0702 and perhaps Dr. Fundile Nyathi can clarify some matters for you. Before we get into PrEP and injectable PrEP, Dr. Nyathi, I guess it helps to start at the beginning, which is the state of play here in South Africa regarding how we as a country are doing in terms of tackling the rates of HIV infections and, of course, treating those with HIV. What do we look like as a country?
Well, as a country, I think let me start by saying South Africa has one of the biggest loads of HIV and AIDS in the world. It is said that at least a fifth of the load of people who are living with HIV are in South Africa. So one in five in the world of people who are living with HIV are here. Mm-hmm. But we must also say, because of that, over the years, we've been able as a country to have the most robust program of ARV access to our people who are living with HIV and AIDS.
Yes.
Whilst at the beginning, if you go 20 years ago, the focus was a lot, on people having access to treatment. You remember the TACs and the other organizations.
The Treatment Action Campaign, yes.
Yeah, but nowadays it's no longer an issue of access to treatment, because our program is accessible via primary healthcare, centers throughout the country. So we are doing very well in terms of rolling out that. But obviously there are advances in the prevention space, and you now talking about pre-exposure prophylaxis, that is giving people treatment who are HIV negative,
yes,
prior to them getting to be at risk of being infected. That's a relatively new thing, let's say, of the last decade, because we used to give treatment after somebody had been exposed, what we call a post-exposure prophylaxis. We still do.
Yes.
But PrEP is new. So as a country, we are currently, since 2020, but research-wise, since 2016, we've been giving pre-exposure prophylaxis through tablets, that is oral PrEP, a combination drug of two active drugs given daily, and which was and still is effective in preventing people getting infected. Mm-hmm. So we've been rolling that out as a country since 2020 at our primary care level, and we've done very well. However, there are now new developments of an injectable That is even better in terms of preventing HIV infections, and that's where we are.
So, Dr. Nyati, as you say, the development of this method of pre-exposure prophylaxis is incredibly important in South Africa. You've established for us that of the people, we've got about around 7.5 million people in South Africa living with HIV, right? About a fifth of the global population that is HIV positive is in South Africa. So, if you could talk to us about how this injectable pre-exposure prophylaxis changes the game for those who are HIV negative and who might, for one reason or another, become exposed to HIV unknowingly, perhaps, or because of circumstances beyond their power.
Yeah, so it is indeed a game changer. It's a game changer, you know, if we just look broadly, not just about these injectables, the issue of gender, power imbalances, has been a problem in dealing with HIV, especially here in sub-Saharan Africa, including South Africa, such that even if people have got access to tablets, they are being able to take those tablets every day, and them being able to adopt other prevention measures has been a challenge, because sometimes they don't have power to negotiate some of these things. Now, when you have an injectable, and in this particular case, this drug is called cabotegravir or LA, long acting, right? You get an injection once every 2 months. You take this injection, and it provides protection in the event that you are exposed to HIV infection. And so the studies that have been done, and by the way, South Africa has played a big role in the studies to look at the effectiveness of this thing. We have been very, very at the forefront of science. And it has shown that in terms of the problem of taking tablets, which is non-adherence to treatment from time to time, it's no longer an issue. In fact, another study done showed that people prefer the injectable compared to the oral PrEP. So, acceptance of the injectable. The fact that I get injected once every 2 months, and I don't have to worry about anything, except doing, the AD.
So let's do this, Dr. Nyati. I'm going to put you back to my producer, and let's see if Comfort can get you back on a better line, because it seems to be deteriorating as you speak. But yeah, to what Dr. Fundile Nyati is talking about is, the fact that the benefit of an injectable product is that it, as he said, it avoids the problem of people having to remember to take a pill daily. In terms of to take a pill daily, and the fact that it is long lasting, it does last for 2 months and helps those who are vulnerable, who fall into that vulnerable, most vulnerable category of being, whether it's women in low income situations or women in abusive relationships, or as you said, within relationships where the power dynamics mean that they can't negotiate the terms on which they have sexual intercourse, then it makes a huge difference in people's ability to prevent HIV infection. Dr. Fundile Nyati, I think we've got you back on the line. Let's test how you sound.
All right. No, I'm back online. I'm back online, yes.
Much better. So you were talking about, of course, the fact that these long, injectable helps so many people in terms of them not having to remember to take a daily pill. And of course, we've been central in carrying out studies or undertaking studies around these injectable PrEP in South Africa.
Yes. Mm.
Dr. Nyati, so in terms of availability of this CAB LA, this injectable pre-exposure prophylaxis, where do we sit as South Africa? Are we dealing with issues of affordability right now?
Well, let me start by saying on the oral one, we have no issues in terms of cost, because we've been able to source it at a very cheap price as a country. So on the oral side, we're good. But on the injectable, the CAB LA, at this moment, if we look at the prices in the U.S., for a one-year treatment, it's $22,000 per person. Now, that's obviously unaffordable for South Africa.
Sure.
Luckily, though, you know, there is a movement to try and get these guys who are original manufacturers to drop the prices and give us generics of this. It's something called medicines patent, entity, you know, medicines patent pool. So as a country, we're one of the 90 countries in the world that will benefit from this brokered medicine patent pool. So we will be able to get it at much, much cheaper prices. However, we have not yet been told exactly at what level, you know, but those who are in the forefront of, you know, research in this area, they are hoping that there will be a settlement at around 160 to 260 per injection, all right?
Yes.
Which is definitely affordable for South Africa compared to that $22,000 per person. Well, in a year, that's about six injections, you know?
Yeah.
So to take it down to 160 to 260 per injection, then that will just take to close to just over, you know, 1,000 per person per year. That is relatively affordable for South Africa.
Yeah, of course, one could make a note that comparing or using the U.S. as a sort of barometer for the cost of medicine might not necessarily be too useful.
Indeed.
Because it's the same country that, you know, charges people almost like $100 for insulin, whereas you go to Canada and you pay $12, you go to Korea and pay, you know, $10 for it. So, yeah,
well,
hardly.
The health system in the U.S. Is very much driven by greed and profit making. That is absolutely ridiculous. So, but in this case, we're not looking at following that direction in South Africa.
Yeah. In terms of vulnerable populations, Dr. Nyati, we're quite a special mix, and by special, I don't mean it's in a good way, of people who are vulnerable to HIV infection. What are the factors? Who finds themselves within that group? And, you know, without effectively saying everybody.
Yes. Well, I mean, obviously, anybody is at risk of getting HIV and AIDS if they engage in sexual activity, you know, and they don't know the status of the other person in general. Mm. But I think what you're asking me is to talk about the at-risk groups or high-risk groups.
Yes.
And here we're talking of what is normally referred to as MSM, men who have sex with other men, is a highly risky group at this moment, number one. People who are in the sex trade, they are a vulnerable and high-risk group. Young adolescents and young women from age 15 up to about 24, we've seen in sub-Saharan Africa that they are the group that has got the highest percentage of new infections.
Three times more likely to acquire HIV than adolescent boys and young men of the same age group.
Exactly. And then it takes us back to the issue of, you know, inequalities, because a report that came out on the 29th from UNAIDS is actually saying inequalities, you know, are driving the fact that we are still far from getting to the targets to reduce HIV and AIDS. And these inequalities are gender-related inequalities, boys and girls, boys, you know, less likely to get infected than their counterparts.
Mm-hmm.
But also females much more likely to be infected compared to the men. But also an inequality in terms of access between adults and children who have got HIV, with adults much more likely to access treatment that is at three quarters of adults, 75%, much more likely to access treatment as compared to just over 50% for children. So those inequalities are problematic. And the discrimination, especially of people in the LGBTQIA space, mm-hmm. in sub-Saharan Africa, where it's still criminalized to have sex with the same gender, it is also a problem. So those are the vulnerable groups, because then access to treatment for them becomes a problem. We see it here in South Africa as well, to some extent. So it is important that we then address those things if we hope, to deal with HIV and AIDS globally. UNAIDS says equalize access to rights, equalize access to services, mm-hmm. equalize access to best science and medicine. At this moment, it is not a reality for everyone, even within our country.
Yeah, inequality there between genders and those power dynamics, they say, that need to be interrupted. But that's fundamentally the ask there is to, restructure, rethink society,
yes.
And our attitudes,
indeed.
And how we indeed. Relate to each other. And that's no small feat. That's no small ask, but a very, very necessary one. Dr. Nyati, I've got a question here on the WhatsApp line before we carry on. This one is a question around, treatment and living with HIV. It says, I've been living with HIV for over 2 decades. Why is it that nurses at the clinic are telling me that I must stay away from the following to avoid boosting the virus? They say I should have no spices in my diet, no other tea brand except rooibos, no coffee, no energy drinks, no vitamin boosters. Is there a scientific basis to this, or are they just nurses and old wives' tales?
Well, look, let me start by saying nurses are a very important, members of the healthcare team.
Mm.
However, they do, some of them at primary care level, which is where it's closest to the people, do not always keep up with scientific information. And sometimes they will use, their own information that is not always supported by science. They think they are helping, but at times they may actually be misinforming. There really isn't any scientific basis to say drink this tea or that tea. Yes, we do know that certain teas have broader health benefits, but those benefits are not necessarily benefits that have got any effect on the HIV virus.
Okay. So, these recommendations aren't harmful at all in any way.
They're not harmful,
yeah.
Yes, but one can't propagate it. Well, as a qualified health professional, unfortunately, people take what you say as if it is then, based in science, mm-hmm. and sometimes you can mislead. And therefore, it's important to avoid saying things that you cannot back up with proven science.
Sure. Dr. Nyati, the long-term effects of using pre-exposure prophylaxis, whether it's oral, whether it's injectable, what's the literature behind that? Or on that, rather?
I think as far as the long-acting, the cabotegravir, it's still too early. I am not aware of, studies that have now come out clearly with, the real world experience in that space. I haven't come across a study there. However, on the oral PrEP, because then those are the ARVs that are in combination. There's two of them in that tablet today.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as those are concerned, obviously, there are a number of potential side effects. To the liver, for example,
okay.
Where there could be some hepatotoxicity, that is irritation of the liver. There could be some nephrotoxicity, that is, irritation, of the kidneys. But also some of them may actually even affect the way the body metabolizes or processes fats in the body, leading to some maldistribution of fat across the body. And to some extent, a potential of, you know, neurotoxicity, that is damage to the nerve. But the benefits still outweigh those potential side effects. Mm-hmm. And in fact, you know, the newer drugs that come in, you find that year on year, the side effect profile is actually getting much better. So obviously, when we prescribe stuff, there must be more benefit than the side effect or adverse effect. Mm-hmm. And in this case, there is enough to show that there's benefit of continuing with such, you know, compared to if not using those things. Mm-hmm. So the side effect profile is really not an issue, unlike, with the time of AZTs and others in the early 2000s, where sometimes people would die from the treatments that we are prescribing as medical people.
Sure. And of course, are ways to mitigate, to mitigate just some of these side effects that you've touched on?
Well, yeah. Well, I think what is important is that there must be those must be given under the care of the right kind of professionals and people who are on ARVs, because there are these potential side effects that sometimes can be quite serious. It's important that people are followed up and blood tests, like, you know, for the liver function, for the kidney function, and the other, you know, blood tests that are looking at some of those are done as part of the follow-up. So, and there must be, you know, the people who are on ARVs must know that they need to have open communication with their treating doctor, so that if there's anything that they experience which is of concern, it is dealt with as soon as possible. But I must say, in general, we no longer have that major problem of side effects compared to when we were still dealing with those earlier generation ARVs.
All right. Dr. Nyati, we're going to have to leave it right there, but thank you so much for your time this morning. Much appreciated, as always.
Thank you very much, and all the best for the rest of the show.